Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. I am your host, Martha Reddick, and this week we are going to be talking about tailoring nannying for girls. When you are nannying two or more girls, it's just a different vibe than when it's two or more boys. And for that, I have an expert in this area, Taryn Pryor. Hi, Taryn.
Hello, Martha. Thanks for having me again.
Thanks for being here. Taryn has been on the podcast before. She did sibling rivalries and potty training with us. So go listen to those episodes if you have not yet. But she's also here today to talk about this. Before we get started with tailoring nannying for girls, let's hear a little bit about your background.
So I am currently working on my master's in early childhood special education. Great. I have been the long-term nanny of a wonderful family of two girls for the last 4 years. I can't believe it's been that long, actually. Yeah. It's just kind of flown by, which is, you know, a whole nother conversation, how fast kids grow. But I have worked with children in all different facets and in all different age groups, being in summer camps, college programs, with really young children, middle schoolers, teaching life skills. So I've been with a lot of different age groups and a lot of different capacities.
Awesome. Well, you seem very well prepared to talk about this issue. Not an issue. It's a fun thing to talk about.
A topic.
Yeah, a topic. Wonderful. Well, my first question is, in your experience, which I know nannying wise, you've mostly worked with girls,
yes.
But Taryn and I are in a play group together. And so we often end up kind of co-nannying.
Oh, definitely.
It's, a lot of kids.
We always tell the kids, any adult can tell you, can give you directions, and you need to follow them.
Exactly. And in that nanny group, it's mostly boys, actually.
It is.
Yeah. What are some things that you've noticed that are just different about nannying girls than working with boys?
So even, I would say, with young children, and even though there are so many similarities and so much advice that adhere to both girls and boys, but just with my time nannying and being in preschools and kindergartens and early childhood in general, there are definitely some differences between boys and girls. I will often see a lot that boys tend to maybe play a little more aggressively, mm-hmm. and, you know, and that's okay. Or they really, really want to run around, do a lot of chasing games, running around, kind of doing different stunts. And girls maybe are more into pretend play, dramatic play, mm-hmm. Doing those kinds of things. And not that they don't like to play on the playground and running around and chasing games. I would just definitely say the level of intensity definitely differs. The ways that they kind of fall back and how to solve issues and conflict.
Yes.
I've definitely noticed a lot of times boys are far more kind of in whoever they're having the conflicts with face, they're maybe sometimes less likely to get an adult involved at the first sight of trouble, as opposed to girls. I mean, at the first sign of any sort of issues or ruffling of feathers, they are going to get an adult and you are going to do something about it.
Yes, that is very true.
Those are two of the biggest differences I think that I've noticed between boys and girls. And then also that some boys and girls kind of really lean towards what I would consider are in our society gender normed activities for them. So girls like to play with the dolls. They like to do dress up. Boys like to play blocks, cars. And then, you know, of course, a mix of in between. But I definitely noticed that a lot of children gravitate to those toys and gravitate to those areas. And it can be for a lot of different reasons. Maybe it's because it's what they've observed, what they've heard, what they've been told, or really just honestly genuine interest.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something. So Logan, my fiance, who's been on the podcast before, his niece and nephew. So they had his nephew is older by a year and some change. And Logan grew up with all brothers. And so like very guy heavy home. And so I know when his niece came along and she like of her own accord like wanted dolls and wanted to play, like she loves tucking things in. And like we got her some Legos of like an RV thing that she could build this RV, and she wanted to put curtains in, things like that.
Oh yeah.
And that's totally her naturally doing that. Because even her mom is not like a super girly mom. Like she's really into sports and stuff. And so for his niece, like I know his Logan's mom often struggles because she's like, I raised all boys. Like I don't know what I don't know how to play these games. And so there is like this natural desire, I think, to especially like take care of things that girls have.
And I think girls are, you know, there are studies that say this, that women are very detail oriented. They're usually more nurturing, and it's very typical. I mean, they're observing their mother, and like when they think of their mother and their father, they equate themselves with their mother, you know, because they're both girls. And their mother takes care of them. I mean, so many little girls I've seen like are really just such great caretakers of their friends, or if anyone's upset in the room or in the playgroup, the youngest child I nanny. I mean, I wrote her a recommendation for the school that she went to, and they asked me to describe her in three words. And one of the words I used was compassionate, because if anyone is crying or upset, she becomes instantly very concerned and a little fixated, and she can't really move on until she knows that that person is okay, or that they're with their adult, or we kind of discussed the issue and what's probably going to happen next.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with that. And not to say that boys that they're not compassionate.
Absolutely.
Or anything like that. But there is it does seem like this natural inclination to go out of your way to care for another person.
Absolutely.
With girls. And that seems to start super duper young.
It does. And in the society that we live in, I don't think that's unusual or out of the ballpark, because women tend to be the caregiver in families and in situations, and that is a totally respectable and fine order of roles, but it definitely makes sense if that's why we would see that in children.
Yep. Although, did you see Richard Scarry went back and reanimated a lot of the scenes to include the dad like in the kitchen, and like just made everything so that both parents are sharing responsibilities.
I loved The Busy World.
I know, me too.
Oh, I just love it. And I've bought the girls a lot of different toys and large books from it, because I think it's a great resource and it shows a lot of happenings going on. And I love that it shows a lot of different animals and different like families. So I just love
and different
everything. Jobs. Oh my goodness.
Because I think it like a lot of times the jobs that are presented to kids are very like they actually are narrower than you would think.
Definitely.
It's like, I'm gonna be a firefighter or a ballerina or whatever. And Richard Scarry is like, everything. Construction worker, janitor.
There's an entire book I got them just on airplanes and what you can do at an airport and all the different jobs and parts and moving pieces there. So I really love how he takes a subject and just really dissects it and makes it very visually appealing. There's lots of conversation pieces. I mean, you can read one of his books for hours, just one of them.
I have. with children, not by myself. Never. I would never. how dare you accuse me? I do, however, feel that sometimes those gender norms, the pressure, the outside pressure, not coming from within the child.
Absolutely.
But the outside pressure gets put on so hard, so early. Are there ways that you have found to help with that, combat that, give the girls the idea that their voice, no matter what they want out of life, counts?
Oh, yeah. You know, there are so many just insane and unrealistic expectations that get put on women and get put on young girls, you know, just from not being able to speak out because, you know, then you're bossy.
Right.
Body image issues. You know, I can think back as far as maybe 6 or 7 was the first time I felt negatively about my body. And that is crazy. I was only 6 or 7. So there are just a lot of pressure that gets put on girls from a very, very young age and a lot of subtle messages that are set. And I really think subtle messages are more powerful than, you know, maybe the things that are big in the way. It's the subtle things that get said to them every day in different ways. Something interesting. I remember the first year the oldest girl I nanny was in preschool, she was the only girl in her class that had curly hair. And I have curly hair, but her mom has straight hair. And there's a lot of curly haired ladies on her dad's side. But she said to me, I'm the only girl that has curly hair in my class. And she said, I wish I had straight hair like mommy. And my heart just sank. Yeah. I was like, oh, you know, your hair is so beautiful. So from that day on, I have always said to her, you know, how versatile your hair is. Wow. You know, people pay a lot of money to get the curls that you naturally have. You're so lucky. Look at all the wonderful different things you can do with your hair. And, you know, curly hair shrinks up. So it sits at about her shoulders, but really it's down to the middle of the back. And so I always talk about how cool it is that she has two lengths of hair in one. So if she ever wanted to have really long hair, she could just straighten it. But otherwise, it just nicely sits on her shoulder. And really what I'm trying to do is just instill confidence in her. Confidence, confidence, confidence. If a child knows who they are, if they like themselves, if they're happy with themselves, they are less likely to be bullied, to be susceptible to peer pressure. And just having a strong sense of self will be able to carry them through, you know, hard times and difficult decisions throughout life. So whether that's in elementary school, middle school, high school, I truly think one of the best things that my parents did was they got me involved in things I was really into, and I was able to foster a strong sense of self and a strong sense of confidence.
Yes, I completely agree. Letting kids have an opinion about the activities that they do, I think is so important. I know my stepdad, who is wonderful, but he in particular didn't understand for a long time that theater is a team sport. And so
it 100% is.
Yeah. And so he was trying to encourage me to like try all these different sports, and I tried them all. Not all. I didn't try basketball because I'm very short. But and I was like,
hey,
it's never
going
to
work Robinson,
out.
I think is 5'8 in the NBA.
Okay.
Anything is possible.
You're
He's
right.
in the NBA. Anything is possible.
But I tried like softball and I tried soccer and I just couldn't get into any of them. But once I found like my theater group, you know, then I was like, oh, this is home. And encouraging kids to to just start to explore that. What feels like home to you?
Yes.
What group of people makes you feel better about yourself, and not what is the cool group, I think really is helpful in the long run. And it starts so early now. I mean, I think it did when we were kids. We just
probably
didn't notice.
But I mean, you know, when I did soccer when I was four, I was the youngest child in the league. And, you know, my dad was one of the coaches. So I think that was probably kind of why they like kind of looked the other way. And they're like, well, it's fine. She can do it. But now there are children as young as 18 months in soccer classes. Yep. And it's not just soccer. It's baseball, softball, all these different activities. And it is definitely wonderful to be able to let your children experience a lot of different things, see what they're good at, see what they're into. Mm-hmm. But there are also a lot of other non-sport related activities that can be great, that are team sports in the way that you said it, that they teach how to cooperate, how to work together, how to work in a team, how to problem solve. And I mean, we could talk for hours about the benefits of theater.
But we will have a podcast about that.
Oh, it'll be good.
Yeah. Because it is. I will forever be grateful to what theater has given me.
I as well. That's what my bachelor's is in.
To give me.
Oh, yes. A lot of transferable skills.
Yes.
I got an internship in DC with a theater undergraduate degree. So, you know, but because I could talk about all the transferable skills and the way that my classes had prepared me, you know, you have to be able to translate to people.
Yep. You do. I think that it's really good to encourage kids to get outside their comfort zone, but also pay attention to where their comfort zone is.
Exactly.
And let them like work from there, not work from outside their comfort zone.
Yeah.
And so if one of the girls that you nanny is really into dinosaurs, like, let her be.
Run with it. Dinosaurs can lead to such a fulfilling and rich exploration. I mean, the possibilities are endless. I really like what you said about just kind of letting the child direct you into what they're interested. And that's not to say that boys and girls can't be interested in traditionally female gendered role things. Like the oldest girl I nanny before she went to preschool, it was always pants, shirts, maybe a couple of skirts, and it just kind of switched. Maybe 2 or 3 months into school, she really wanted to wear a lot of dresses. All of a sudden, she wanted to be Cinderella. And the year before, she was Mike Wazowski from Monsters, Inc. And that is totally fine, because she was genuinely jazzed and interested. And now all she wears are dresses, even her pajamas are dresses. But I think if that is what a child feels confident in, feels powerful, feels themselves, then she should wear a skirt and a dress. If that is what she is comfortable in, then that is what she should wear every single day. You should not force a child to wear clothes because, you know, either they're going against the grain or because it's not the gender norm. Children should be able to play in what makes them feel confident, powerful.
Yeah. And a girl that I have nannied for in the past, she was so funny because she would look outside and be like, oh, it's sunny, so I need to wear pants because we're going to go on the playground and I'm working on being able to do a flip on the bar. And it was like,
a lot of foresight. I like it. And planning.
I was like, that is fine and great and do it. Just letting them choose, I think, is the best. Have you found any particular games or activities that go really well with like multiple girls in a space?
So funnily enough, I think in the beginning, I was always thinking I need to do art and arts and crafts and creating things. And that has been a wonderful outlet of activities, and all, and not even just things like crafts that I have like a picture in mind to end at, but just giving them different materials and saying, what can you make with this? You know, those have been wonderful. But what I've really found to be a hit lately are science experiments.
Ooh, yeah.
And I know that is across the board. Like, just little kids yeah. love science experiments. But I do think people are more hesitant or less likely to do it with a group of girls. They always think, oh, art, paint, let mm-hmm. me have them make headbands, which are wonderful, fulfilling, enriching activities.
Yes.
But the response I have gotten from them doing science experiments has been extremely overwhelming. Like, even yeah. when I just kind of suggested it offhand, oh, would you guys want to do this egg experiment? Like, all very up. Wide, they were like, yes, let's do that.
Yeah.
So now I try to incorporate it and do science experiments more on more of a consistent basis because they were engaged the entire time,
yeah.
making predictions, wanting to know more, asking to do more. And it's with just household items. We put eggs in different liquids. Mm-hmm. Like, we did vinegar, oil, water. I think we did a Coke, and just what did we think was gonna happen? We let it go there for a day. We made these like ice balloon balls. Mm-hmm. So we filled yeah. balloons with water and food color. And this was in winter, obviously. And yep. we left them outside, and then we took the balloons off, and they were these huge globes of ice. We've done experiments with like baking soda and vinegar. Those are great. Yeah. And there are just so many different ways to
explosion.
There's so many ways to make things explode
yeah.
and put food coloring in it. And people, kids, girls, love it. So yeah. that is something I would highly, highly, highly encourage people to try with their girls.
Yeah.
You will be shocked, amazed, and delighted at how into it they are.
Yeah. And there's lots of books. In fact, I think there's one, I mean, and obviously like Pinterest and online resources, but I think there's a book specifically called like At Home Experiments, and it's supposed to be things that you would have in your kitchen.
There are lots of books that are aimed at being able to do experiments just in your house. Yeah. I would definitely encourage people to check them out. And, you know, your library will probably yes. even have them. You don't even have to buy them.
Right, which is great. Support libraries. They're wonderful. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, science experiments. I forget about those sometimes.
There's a real lack of women in STEM. Mm-hmm. You know, my sister-in-law was a chemical engineer. She's now moved on to more of a business background, but that was one of her top complaints, is that she works with all men and there aren't a lot of women. I know that's a complaint of a lot of yeah. women scientists, women working in the technology field. And it's not that women aren't capable, but I just think that at a young age, girls are directed into the arts or just into other things. And yeah. it's not for a lack of having the intellectual ability. Mm-hmm. It's just you do what you've been exposed to, what you've been around, what you know, and that's where your interests kind of funnel from. So if you expose girls young to science and that it's really cool, it's really exciting, I think we could.
And yeah, just building those positive memories with it, you know,
exactly.
Of like, we had so much fun doing this as a kid. So when they get into a science class, they already have positive thoughts about it, instead of like, I've never seen any of this before in my life. And that's daunting.
And it is okay if they aren't into it. I'm yeah. from a family of engineers, and I have nothing but really unpleasant memories of right. math and science. And that is okay. But I was exposed to it.
Right.
So I know that that's yeah. not my thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's lovely. I like that a lot. So what about girls that don't feel like they fit in at school? How do you help them navigate that? Which I know only one of your nanny kids is in school, but mm-hmm. you've also taught in schools.
Yeah, I think talking is really, really important. And mm-hmm. these can be difficult subjects to talk about, but you would be surprised, A, just how much better someone can feel just getting something off their chest, just
yeah.
talking it out to another person, being able to express themselves. They're not letting it build up inside. And through talking with it, they might be able to kind of dissect their own feelings, and they can get strategies from you. I think it also goes back to kind of what you said, finding your home, instilling mm-hmm. confidence in children, helping them find, well, what are they good at? What are they interested mm-hmm. in? How can I find you other people that are into what you are doing, what you're interested in. But I think talking to your children is the only way that you're going to know anything about what are the problems. Is this something that are perceived slights? Are there real issues? Is it just making friends issue? Is it they're not into the same things as me? Talking will be able to shed a lot of light onto the situation and coming up with strategies to fix it with your child.
For example, recently one of my female nanny kids was telling me how this girl in her class found a like a Fitbit, like a kid's Fitbit in the school, like found it.
That's exciting.
Very exciting. But the other child, not my nanny kid, was like, I'm not turning this in to Lost and Found. I'm keeping it. And my nanny kid told her that's the wrong choice.
She was like, the wrong choice.
She was like, you need to turn it into Lost and Found. And the other girl was like mad at her and because she spoke up. And so, you know, I'm hearing all this and I was like, but good for you for speaking up.
Good.
Like, and I think she's not a friend that you want if that's going to be her attitude.
And it's wonderful that she felt comfortable enough to tell you about that, to talk to you about it so she could. Because from what I'm hearing, it's sounding like she wants reassurance.
Yes.
Did I do the right thing? Did I make the right decision? Is she right? Am I wrong? And talking to your children, talking about these situations, you can reinforce what. Obviously, she already has a great moral compass and she acted on her instincts. And I am just so elated to hear that she stood up to her friend, that
Me
she
too.
Advocated for what was the right, the moral thing to do.
Yeah. I gave her a big hug and I was like, I am so proud of you. And I was like, and don't worry about her because that's if that is her attitude and if she continues down that path, that's not a friend that you're going to want. Anyway,
so true.
So yeah, just talking about it, I completely agree. That's like really step number one, and then don't stop.
Never stop talking to your kids. You know, a lot, and it can be, it's maybe some uncomfortable conversations on gender norms and what that means down the line, and how do we think about and treat girls and women. But they're very, very important conversations to have, and it's the subtle messages that get sent that children are trying to understand. And just because a child maybe isn't talking to you about it doesn't mean that they're not thinking about it and interested or trying to make their own explanation. So you would much rather them talk to you, an experienced adult, about what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what they're wondering, what they're scared about, what they're anxious about. Talking, I can't encourage it enough.
It's one of our best tools. And yeah, a little trick for if you do in those conversations get to where you feel like you're maybe overstepping your bounds as a nanny, which depending on how close you are with the nanny parents and how much you've talked about how they want things handled.
Absolutely.
But I know like when it gets into like religion or sex, for me, my response is I would love to talk to you about that. But you know who would love to talk to you even more? Your parents.
Absolutely.
And that makes it not taboo because you're like, I would talk to you about it, but I know that your parents want to talk to you about this, and then redirects. I just feel like a lot of times like the natural response is like, oh, no, we can't talk about that. And then that just creates this whole complex.
It shuts down the conversations and they think, oh, am I not supposed to know? I'm chuckling because the oldest nanny asked me a couple weeks, so maybe 2 months ago, where do babies come from? Because I'm engaged and she knows my fiance really well. And she was asking, well, are you and, you know, his name is Mike. Are you and Mike going to have a baby?
We can share adults' names. Yeah. Okay. I just don't want to share children's names.
I'm glad you can sense my hesitation. Like, oh, should I say his name? You know, are you and Mike going to have a baby? And I said, you know, I hope someday, you know, when we're older.
Right.
After we've gotten married. And then she asked, oh, well, how is it going to get in your belly? how does a baby get in your belly? And I, she goes to a religious school. So we ended up talking about God. She said, oh, does God put it there? And I go, lots of people pray to God to help them to have a baby. Yet that is very true. Mm-hmm. And then she goes, no, how do they get in the belly?
Don't try to sidestep this.
I know. She was like, you heard me, woman. Answer my question. And I told her that I said a very similar answer, that it is a really exciting and fun story, but it's also something that parents really like to talk about with their children. I said, so I want to give your parents the opportunity because I don't want to take that fun away from them.
Yeah.
And she seemed satisfied by that answer. And I texted her parents. I text them throughout the day, like little updates. And I was like, just an FYI.
Here's what's coming at you.
This is what I said. And they were just dying laughing. Gosh. But that's a perfect way. I mean, that is just dead on perfect advice to say that you would love to talk with them about it, but it's something that parents really like to talk about with their children. You don't want to take that experience away. And after you've talked about it with your parents, you would love to talk about it with them more and in depth, but definitely being very aware of your boundaries. How do parents want you to broach topics? I mean, it can be about anything. One time the oldest asked me about, what are homeless people? Who are homeless people? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I reached out to the parents asking, how do you want me to frame this answer? Because different people feel very differently about that subject. And you just want to respect however the parents want to raise their children.
Yep. And shout out to my stepdad. He's the one that taught me that trick. So I just want to give
him credit. Knowledgeable man.
He is. He's a psychologist. He knows lots. Are there any great, like, energy burners that you can suggest for those days when you're like struggling to keep up? Because I feel like girl energy, like we talked about kind of at the beginning, is very different than boy energy.
Relentless.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I will persistent, detail oriented. Yes. I will definitely say that. You know, something that we recently did that was a great energy burner, and it was something in the house, was doing water play. And I know when people think water play, they're thinking, oh, I need a table. Mm-hmm. I need to set up all these things and I can't do it. I mean, you could literally stick your kids in the bathtub in their swimsuits, put a ton of toys in there, and they would have a ball. What mm-hmm. I did was I had them in the bathroom on the main floor. I had them play in the sink. And then there was kind of this big box that I put in, like a standing box shower. Right. I put it in there. I put different toys at each kind of station. I had them switch. I would definitely have them wear a swimsuit next time. I know better. It was a rookie mistake. But the oldest, you know, they have sensory play at her school. The youngest, I mean, she just dove in and she was soaked and she was okay with it. And I said, next time we will put on a bathing suit.
Yep.
But I mean, they were really engaged in it and they've asked about it a couple of times and said, can we do that again? You know, so something that seems so simple, I mean, we did it for like an hour, hour and 15 minutes. And that is a long time for children mm-hmm. to do anything, especially in, you know, the 3 to 7 or 8 age group.
Yeah. Which on that same line of thinking, some of my nanny kids, actually boys and girls, would love to like do the dishes, and I'm making scare quotes around it because they're not actually washing them, but they love to like just have dishes and play with them in the sink under like running water or filling up the sink and letting them play with these,
simple.
It's so simple. And so I give effective. Them like a clean sponge and they like rub off all the
go to town.
Yeah. And I'm like, great, this is wonderful. And they'll do it for like 30 minutes. Yeah. And it's the best thing right after lunch because I let them play with dishes. Like I rinse off the dishes first. And then I let them play with the dishes and then I get to clean the counters and like under the table while I'm there.
Dual purpose.
Yeah. I'm like, this is great because I can see them, but it's perfect. So yeah, water play. That's a great idea.
Another activity I really love, and hear me out because this is very typical gender normed for girls, but baking mm-hmm. is an excellent activity. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different disciplines woven in there. You yeah. have science, you have math, because science, you're making something into something else.
Right.
You're creating something, math, because you're having to use measurements. Mm-hmm. How much are you putting into things? And it's, if you involve them in every step of it, it's actually a very, very long process. Yeah. Whenever I bake with the girls, that's our morning activity.
Yeah.
Especially if it's something that you can do, that you can decorate mm-hmm. afterwards so they can be creative. It's also something that gives them a sense of pride and joy. I know as soon as their parents come home, they are always like, look at what we made. Do you want to try some? Can we yeah. have this for dessert today? We made this. It gives them ownership and pride. And baking is definitely not just for girls. Mm-hmm. It is for anyone right. who enjoys delicious treats.
Boys all the time. But yes.
Everyone loves delicious treats. But I have found that my girls are really into it. They commit to it. And it's wonderful because there are kind of break times woven into it.
Right.
So while, you know, if we're making cookies, if we're making brownies, if we're making cupcakes, especially multiple batches, mm-hmm. it goes in. They have the 8 to 10 or however many minutes to go play. Timer rings. They are back on. They have this, they call it a tower, but it yeah. they can climb on and it raises them to the countertop so we yeah. can have an actual conversation and they're not looking up at me the entire time. But they are engaged. They're interested. And there's just a lot of different great skills woven into it, even though it's so a more gender normed female activity, but right. effective.
Yeah. One thing that two nanny girls that I nannied a long time ago, but one of their favorite activities, also somewhat gender normed, but they love playing Get Cozy, which is like find all the blankets in the house and pile them, like each person gets a turn being the one to get cozy, and then the other people help get that person cozy. So we just like lay blankets on top of that a person and then like tuck them in.
Maybe this is a girl thing, because I know my girls, it's not the exact same thing, but for 20 or 30 minutes, they call it sleep. We're playing sleep.
Uh-huh.
And they'll put their dolls to bed. They'll put themselves to bed. I mean, they put on the night lights, the sound yeah. machines. They turn off the lights. They close the shades. I mean, I've like gone in the room and been like, what's going on? Is everyone asleep? Like, what? Because
yeah. the first time it ever happened, I like had gathered a bunch of blankets because I was like, we're going to make a fort. It's going to be awesome. And they were like, no, no, no. We're playing Get so Cozy. You think. Yeah. And I was like, okay, this is even better than, I mean, forts are awesome. That was episode number one.
But it's important to allow the children to yeah. direct what they want to do, where they want to go. Children will never disappoint you.
No.
With their really ideas. Won't. They're always interesting and creative and a lot of fun.
Yep. That is so true. How about any good book recommendations? We already talked about Richard Scarry.
We did. Oh, he is just Busy wonderful world. For anyone. There are so many different books, but so I really like the Elephant and Piggy series uh-huh. by Mo Williams. So that's nice because it kind of utilizes a different style of text. Mm-hmm. It's thought and word bubbles. So that's a
kind of
nice,
like a comic book.
Yes. Yeah, so that's like a really nice way to introduce that genre. But also Piggy is a girl, Elephant's a boy. They have these series of great adventures. They don't too heavily lean on the fact that Piggy's a girl, but it,
yeah,
you know,
I didn't
it is
even know that. And I've
yeah,
read them.
I mean, I can't remember what book it was that I figured out that Piggy was a girl, but I also love that their genders are not important.
Right.
You can't
they're
really tell.
They're not romantically involved.
They are not romantically they're involved. Friends. They're just absolute best friends. Mm-hmm. They wear lots of silly costumes. Mm-hmm. And I think they do refer to her as she once. I think that's how I figured it out.
Right.
But also, you know, in some things she was wearing a dress.
Right.
But overall, I just think it's a really great series about camaraderie and friendships and tackling different problems. I also really like Fancy Nancy.
Oh, yes.
It's a great book for language, different words.
Vocabulary building.
And, you know, she is a girly girl, but there's nothing wrong with that. The book, it's vibrancy of colors, a diversity mm-hmm. of characters, lots of different subjects tackled. I read Fancy Nancy when I was younger mm-hmm. and I just love it. So I definitely recommend those. I'm a big fan of both of those series. But really, you cannot go wrong with any books. And I feel like we are now living in a time of really, really rich children's literature.
Me too.
Especially children's literature that is focused on strong girl, female characters, because, you know, there are
we're getting there.
There are lots of studies that are now pointing out that in a lot of books, they really kind of default to having male characters. And if they do have female characters, they're not important to the plot. They don't speak very much. So I would just encourage anyone who is buying books for girls to make sure you read the book.
Right.
Are there strong female characters in there? Are they doing things that are not just gender normed in our American society? And it is getting better. There is definitely more things on the market. And this is a kind of along that vein, but a friend of mine, Parker, who's been on
the podcast
before, he nannied a girl around the same age as my oldest girl. And he lamented one time when he was trying to buy her a birthday card that he didn't want to buy her a birthday card that talked about how pretty she was or her princess. He's like, I want a card that talks about how intelligent she is, creative, you know, just something that isn't centered on how she looks. And he really looked for one and he found one.
Wow.
I remember he was really upset and he was very unhappy, you know, and he wrote about it and subtle messages.
Yeah.
So if you get a birthday card every day for the prettiest girl, I don't want to discourage people from pointing out that people are pretty. That is a wonderful self-esteem building compliment, but it shouldn't be the only compliments you give. And if you do compliment a girl on her looks, what I try to do with the girls that I nanny is, I love that outfit you have on.
Right.
You really coordinated those colors well. Or they really pop. Or they really bring out your eyes and your hair. Or I see you spent so much time on your hair. It really frames your face really well. Not just, you look really pretty and beautiful. And, you know, that's all that there is to you. And that's, of course, not what you're saying. But you just have to be aware of the very subtle messages.
But if it's all
messages.
They ever hear, then that is what you're saying, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a list, and I will try to find it and post it on Facebook on the Chronicles of Nannia website as well. But there is a list because there's been studies too about when you talk to a girl that you don't know, a lot of times you will go towards outfits or how they look.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk to boys that you don't know, our natural like cultural inclination is to ask about what their favorite animal is or something that is
so interesting.
Yeah. And so I have really tried to like think about that when, you know, I'm hanging out on a playground and, you know, kids run up to you because you're an adult.
They do.
They're like,
hold this for me. Help me with this.
I'm right in the sandbox. And I'm like, that's great. Or, you know, whenever you have to interact with a kid. And so I try to like think of questions that don't have to do with the way that they look, just because that's commonly what girls are getting, and boys seem to get asked questions
and
more
it's very
about their
surface opinion. Yeah. level. Your appearance, you know, anyone can buy this t-shirt, but not everyone is into polar bears or went to the zoo and knows all about tiger. You know, you want to dig deeper with kids because kids have depth. They don't need to have surface conversations with them. You can dig deep with them. They'll meet you there.
Really quick back to books, because I have a couple of recommendations of very good feminist literature for little kids. One of which is The Paper Bag Princess. It is one of my favorite books.
Love The Paper Bag. Robert Munsch, actually, who is so fun. He's also written Stephanie's Ponytail, Wait and See. Now that I think about it, he has a lot of strong female characters in all of his books. And
he's the Joss Whedon of board books.
Great. You know, and he always says that he writes about the people that he knows.
Yeah.
Which I think is very, very interesting.
That's
very
like
telling.
Joss Whedon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They both say that of like, they're like, I write about strong female characters because that's what I know. Mm. Another one that I really love is called Cinder Edna. And Cinder Edna is, she lives next door to Cinderella, and like she doesn't complain about having to do housework. She like cleans bird cages to earn money. She takes the bus to the ball. She wears loafers. She ends up, well, I don't want to ruin it, but her happily ever after looks very different from Cinderella's happily ever after. And just a comparison of like, you don't have to live one way to have a happily ever after.
So true. Happily ever after means different things to different people, and yes, that's okay.
And that's totally fine. And so I love that one. There's also a series of women in science or women in history that are chapter books. So when your nanny kids get to the age, and they are written, I think, about a second or third grade level. But my second grader, who reads at about a third grade level, but that I work with sometimes, she loves them. And
that's wonderful.
And loves learning about all these strong women. So those are my baseline recommendations. I could go on for years about this. But yes. And one more, which I just discovered this. They have come out with, I think it's Hope Larson. It's a graphic novel version of A Wrinkle in Time, which was one of my favorite books growing up. And the graphic novel version of it just makes it more easily accessible. And that is a strong female in science. And so I've been reading that with some of my older nanny kids, and it's been going so well. They eat it up. They can't wait to read more.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And that's one that you have to read with them, because they're big words like tesseract and and like one of the beings that helps them along their journey only speaks in like other languages for most of it. She uses casual quotes. Yeah. And so I'm just like, I'm not gonna read that because I don't know how. But anyway, that's another really good, and I found that at my library. So,
and that's as we said before, the library and the librarian can also point you to, all you have to do is say, I'm looking for some books with some strong girl characters, and they will send you packing with a lot of books.
Yeah. My understanding, especially of the Chicago library system, is like working in the children's section is like the one of the highest.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Like you do not get, you are a qualified person to work there. Of course, all librarians are qualified. But you know,
the children, it's a coveted position to be able to work in the children's section. So I trust them a lot.
Oh, yes.
Do you ever talk to your girls about consent and about like body, your bubble, and who you can allow in, and you have the right to not allow people in?
Oh, yeah. I think talking about consent is very important for both boys and girls. Yes. And I know right now we're like focusing on girls, but yes, right. I do talk to the girls about consent, you know, and in the way that you just said, that this is your body and no one has the right to touch it, be near it, if you don't like it. And you have the right to remove yourself from situations that you don't like. And I really try to teach the girls to advocate for themselves. I think that's something that really gets kind of glossed over and overlooked with girls. I
agree.
You want to teach all children this, but particularly girls, so they grow to be women that feel comfortable speaking up for themselves and saying, I don't like this and I'm not going to accept this. And so I'm always telling the girls, if they come up with me wanting to intervene in conflict, and not that you send kids out on their own to deal with it, but when they tell me he or she did this, and I'm like, well, tell him that.
Right.
Tell them you don't like that. And, you know, and so I'll go over with them and kind of maybe facilitate any, put any language gaps in, make sure that they're talking to each other, translating for them. So I'm hearing you say this. Is this what you mean? Okay, can you say that to this person? But really teaching them to tackle their conflicts head on, and particularly about personal space, yes. personal choice, that they have the right to have a choice. They have the right to their feelings, no matter what. I always try to, even when I'm disciplining the girls, I say, you have a right to feel. You are upset and that is okay. You are angry mm-hmm. and that is okay. You know, letting them know that they can feel this whole myriad of feelings, that they don't have to always be these smiling, happy, docile yeah. creatures, that women and girls are a lot of things. We're passionate, we're angry, we're mad, we're sad. You can feel this whole host of emotions, and not only can you have the right to.
Yeah, and you have the right to put them out in the world.
Yeah.
You do not have the right to invade other people's spaces with your anger.
Exactly. And you know, it works both ways. Yes. That you have a bubble that yeah. you want people to respect, and you also have to respect someone else's bubble.
Right. But yes, to say you have every right to feel those feelings. That's so important, and something that I work with all of my nanny kids on. Just giving them a voice. Because all children, I feel like it gets glossed over. Their opinions are often just pushed to the side of like, well, this is what we're doing because I said so, things like that. But I do feel like it's especially true of girls, of, you know, smile and go along with it because that's the easiest thing. And the reinforcement that they're getting in school is, you know, the girls that are good students, quote unquote, mm-hmm. are the ones that sit there quietly. And so just, you know, celebrating when they do stand up to their friends or things like that. Or
absolutely.
When they say, I don't like this, being like, thank you for sharing that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love it. Yes.
I love that too. And something that I'm very passionate about is especially hugging. I feel like there's this somewhat, and it's fading out, thank the Lord. But there is this insistence by some people to force kids to hug people that they don't want to hug. And that's something that I am passionately against. I don't think a child should have to hug even a family member if they don't want to.
I 100% agree.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, we've even witnessed it in our own nanny group. We'll say, oh, we're saying bye. And if one half of a pair wants to give a hug and mm-hmm. the other half does, we say, you don't have to give a hug.
Yeah.
You can give a high five, a fist pound, you can wave, or you can say nothing.
Yeah.
And that is totally fine.
That's
because
your
we want to teach kids, boys and girls, that they are autonomous over their bodies, but we want to teach them to respect the decisions of other people that mm-hmm. they make with their body. So if they don't want to hug you, mm-hmm. then that's the end of the story. And
right.
I've said to my girls before, no means no.
Right.
When someone says no, that is now the end of the conversation. You don't try to coerce them or convince them. That is their opinion and you need to respect it. And I've even said to them before, you need to respect each other and you need to respect that they've said no. And
right.
I even said that today. We went to a play place and there was kind of a kerfuffle over a toy. And, you know, I said, did you put that toy down? And she said, yes, but he picked it up. And I said, well, you can go over to him and politely explain the situation. You could say something like, I wasn't done playing with this, or I would still like to play with it. And I said, but if he says no, then that's the answer. And she said, okay. And, you
aww.
Know, and I watched from afar and she was very polite about it. And, you know, the child really didn't care. He just handed it over.
Nice.
And I said, wonderful. But I really think it's those little reminders, like if he says no, then you have to find something else. You have to, or if she says no, or if they don't want a hug, then move on.
Yep. Those subtle reminders combat the subtle messages that they're receiving.
They do. But I agree with you 100%. Even in family, if someone does not want to hug,
yep.
kiss, whatever, then you need to respect that of your children.
Yep, I completely agree. And, you know, we're nannies, so we don't always get to
the final say.
But I totally think that that is true. And with all of my nanny kids, that's the way we run things.
And you can even talk to the parents if they are maybe, I don't want to say are into forced hugging, but
right.
maybe they see it as an expression of love and they want to teach their children how to express love and friendship, you can maybe explain this to them and what you're trying to do, and you're really trying to teach the children to advocate for themselves, and you feel very strongly that, especially with physical touching, no one, but particularly girls, no girl should be made to touch someone else or let someone else touch them in any way if they don't want to.
Yes.
Because it sends a subtle message that many women carry far, far, far into their 20s, 30s, 40s, and even 50s, 60s.
Yeah. So. For sure. Yes. And that is something that we can do as nannies. And I love it. Wonderful. Well, are there any other things that you want to talk about?
No, I think we covered a lot of different topics, and I think we gave a lot of different resources and things for people to really think about and how maybe they can incorporate in their own lives or the lives of the children that they nanny.
Yeah. And during this week, I will be sharing on the Chronicles of Nannia Facebook page. I will try to find lists of good books for feminism. Absolutely. and that list of conversation starters that don't have to do with appearance and things like that. So check back. I will try to share something every day. So check back at Chronicles of Nannia on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And you can also visit www.chroniclesofnannia.com. And if you are enjoying this podcast, please, if you would be so kind as to go on iTunes and write how much you are enjoying this podcast, that would be so helpful to getting us seen by more eyes, because the written reviews are the biggest help to bumping our podcast up on the algorithm so it gets seen more often. So if you have 5 minutes this week, which I know we're nannies, we're very busy, but if you have 5 minutes, it would mean the world to me if you would go on iTunes and write a positive review. If you are not sure how to do that, if you visit www.chroniclesofnannia.com, we have a step-by-step guide of how to review. So, and how to listen if you're hearing this by mistake and you're not sure how to do it again, you can also go and figure out how to listen on chroniclesofnannia.com. Anyway, we end each episode with a story from a nanny kid. And Taryn has brought a wonderful one that actually somewhat has to do with what we're talking about.
Fits in so well with what we just ended the conversation on. So I'm at a play place. They're very popular in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Those winters.
They are, you know, or just cold and windy. Yeah. And they're just fun places they to are. Be. So we were at a play place before we have to take the oldest to school. And, you know, I'm sitting. The girls usually go in different directions. So I try, and when it's just me, I try and do like a zone thing. I try and park myself in the middle, kind of, you know, involving myself in the play when invited, but also just like looking for when there's conflict and whether I'm needed or not. And all of a sudden, the youngest comes up to me very serious-like, and she says, "Taryn," and I go, "Yes." And she goes, "I touched someone's butt." And I looked at her, and I said, "What?" "I touched someone's booty." And I said, "Well, why? Why did you touch someone's booty?" And she said, "Well, their booty was in the window. I wanted to close the window and their booty was there." And I asked her for clarification, "Did you close the window on someone's booty?" And she said, "Yes, I wanted to close the window." And so after clarifying that the little girl, the other little girl, was okay and that she hadn't been injured, we talked about, well, what was another way you could have handled that situation? What could you have said to the little girl? And she said, "I could have said, 'Can you please move your booty? I want to close the window.'" And we talked about how you don't have the right to touch anyone else's booty. I said, "Did you ask her if you could touch her?" And she said, "No." And I said, "Would you like it if someone came up and poked you and they didn't ask you?" And she said, "Oh, no. No, I don't like that." And just talked about and reinforced the importance of asking someone, can I touch you? Can I be in your space? And, you know, saying that no one can come in your space. Like, you have a bubble. People need to ask permission to come into it. And it's the same thing for anyone you meet here. And I had her go apologize to the girl. You know, just you want everyone to feel safe. But it's little things like that. That is something I could totally have written off and said, don't do that again, or like apologize to the girl. But explaining to her why it was important that she not touch someone that she doesn't know, she didn't ask. And even if they are your friend, saying that even if they know them, they still need to ask for permission. Being a friend does not give you license to touch someone. You still need to ask.
Yes, so important.
Well, and so hilarious.
And so hilarious because, all of this was about touching the butt, like Finding Nemo.
I instantly thought of that. I wanted to say, you touched the butt?
I know, but it might not apply.
So, you know, you have read to hold the room. Back sometimes. Yeah. I write, you sometimes you really have to read the room.
Yep, and it's important. Well, wonderful. Thank you so much, Taryn, for being here.
Thank you, Martha, for having me. I always enjoy coming on here and having such a great conversation.
And we always enjoy having you. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
The Chronicles of Nannia is produced by Martha Reddick and Logan Nielsen. Artwork and logo by Noni Amadon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Nannia and on Twitter at Nannia Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnannia@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
This show has been brought to you by Machine Culture.